And welcome in to this Tuesday, October 3rd edition of The Lowdown. We thank you so much for being here with us. That is Jason Ross. I am Damian Barling. We thank you for listening. We welcome you in. If you're listening on the radio.com app, the TuneIn app, if you're listening on khdk.com, or you're listening here in Northern California on Sports 1140 AM. We got tickets to see Luke Bryan. The Lowdown continues to be your home for country music.
Your country leader.
As it should be, because that fits us brilliantly. Luke Bryan, October 13th. Oh, he's at the Golden One Center.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even read this. I just assumed he was at the – are we sure this is right, that he's at the Golden One Center? I feel like –
says on mine, Toyota Amphitheater.
Okay, I think he's at the amphitheater. I think I'm Ron Burgundy.
No, it was put there inaccurately.
Regardless of wherever Luke Bryan is, we have your tickets to see him. All you got to do is drive around October 13th
and find him. Yeah.
You find him, boom, you get a concert. There. How you like that? So we'll have those for you today. Jay Ross and I will have one small thought with week 4 of the NFL season now in the books.
Man.
And, man, it went out, in spectacular fashion for just about everybody last night with that Monday night football game. We'll have one small thought on the NFC. Levi Damian will join us, lead writer and editor-in-chief for Silver and Black Pride. We'll have our winners and losers of the week. Let's see, where do we go here? Kings beat the Spurs last night. You can't go 89-0 without going 1-0. And they've got their first win last night. We'll get to that in just a second. Derek Carr, though, these back spasms, man, those are a bitch. Because apparently these are some really bad back spasms that he has. He's out 2 to 6 weeks. I believe Chris had the wording in his earlier update. Transverse fracture, broken pain. It's back.
He's
and
hurt.
It's painful.
Yeah.
Yoga's not going to fix this.
No.
So he's out 2 to 6 weeks. No word on what's going on with Marcus Mariota yet. Again, we'll talk with Levi at 1:30 about, I guess we're running with DJ Manuel, which is fine.
Yeah.
For now.
Mm-hmm.
What if it goes bad? You're not turning to Connor
for Manuel, or
if it goes bad for Manuel, it's going bad for the Raiders.
True. Much like it did last year with McGloin or Connor Cook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carr is important.
A little bit.
Yeah. Very, very important. They might be able to skirt through this one with the Ravens. Might. I think they can, actually, but got to do other things right. Play defense, run the ball, find your playmakers that don't drop the ball, those kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brandon Whedon has a job. I just thought I'd
Doing
point
what?
That out to you. He is a quarterback for
that Brandon Whedon?
Yes. That same one. Brandon Whedon, who I think has won one game as a starter out of his 15 opportunities to start. Brandon Whedon has a job. He was signed today by the Tennessee Titans. Bob McNair donated $1 million to a particular campaign this past election. So if you thought there was a chance in hell they were going to sign a certain unemployed quarterback that used to play in the Bay Area, there are seven teams on the no-fly list for Colin Kaepernick, and the Titans are one of them.
That's interesting because, it's owner's, discretion, I guess, or choice. Sometimes I can honestly say fit, right? That one you go, fit is good. Mariota, Kaepernick, similar styles. That would be maybe be not missing a beat, per se. They went to Castle. It was bad. Whedon's never been good. Yeah, that one I think is a mistake.
That's a huge miss.
Yeah.
That's it. But, never mind.
To each
their
own.
It's too early to get involved in that. If you want to sacrifice your wins and losses, because Brandon Whedon's not going to win you games.
Nope.
I don't care how good Derek Henry is. I don't care how good DeMarco Murray is.
He's not going to win it.
He's not going to win you a football game. Yeah. It is a scientific fact. When Brandon Whedon is on the field, you lose.
Yeah.
Now, there were some people who watched DJ Manuel play. There were some Raider fans who watched DJ Manuel play on Sunday in those few minutes that he was in there and thought that when he was out there, he moved the ball pretty well. I was one who – EJ Manuel, to me, continues to kind of be this baffling – When I said I didn't think he was that bad in Buffalo, Raider fans killed me over it. Not only Raider fans, everybody killed me over that. I guess maybe I just didn't watch close enough or I didn't watch long enough in Buffalo, but I was always curious about how quickly his run there came. It just came to like an abrupt end. It was like, oh, look, kid's playing all right, Oh, no, get Tyrod in there. Get this idiot out of here. Like, wait, what? And then he was brought in to be the third string quarterback. And when we had Levi on during training camp, I think it was the second or third week of training camp, he was like, no, it's very clear EJ Manuel has won this job. It's probably not even close.
Yeah, apparently he was doing great things in practice because I don't think he had a good preseason as far as games went.
And then there was that, which brought about the sentiment that you echoed repeatedly, which was Derek Carr can't get hurt.
Right. And sadly, it happened. Now, it doesn't sound... You know, initially it was like, it looked bad. Then it's like, oh, maybe it's not going to be a thing. Well, 2 to 6 weeks is a thing. I mean, if it's two or one or two, no big deal. You start spilling into 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. You know, the goals are there. Like we said yesterday, win the division, it's getting a little bit more difficult. Kansas City's got a little breathing room on you. And if you miss a game without Carr against Kansas City that you lose, I mean, that's, you're starting to create a gap there between first and the Raiders.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's...
That's the issue.
I advocated for one quarterback to take Derek Carr's place should Derek Carr go down. But 2 to 6 weeks isn't long enough. Mm-hmm. And he's too good at his announcing job. I thought Tony Romo was the perfect fit. Yeah. I thought there were two places that Tony Romo could play. Oakland was one. Dallas was the other. But 2 to 6 weeks isn't long enough. He's gotten such praise for his announcing work. I don't even think if the Cowboys called that he's coming out of that booth. I actually think he's done.
I don't know.
You seem skeptical.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now we're talking about something I don't want to. I mean, like if it was season ending for.
Which it's not.
For Prescott or to him.
Everybody comes back for back injuries. I mean.
You heard him react to it the second it happened. He's like, oh no. Yeah. I mean, Romo, it was like, I don't think he's hurt. And I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, Romo knew.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it, like, right away, that it didn't play, look like it was that bad. And then, of course, hey, I'm not the one getting kneed in the back.
That play looked really, really similar to Romo's play last
with
preseason.
Seattle. Yeah.
Really, in that it's not like a monstrous jarring hit. He's not getting, because in Romo's others, it was his collarbone. Like, mm-hmm. he was basically getting picked up or slammed or squashed. He was just, there was weight. And then a solid object on the other side of that weight.
Yeah.
This one, it was getting rolled up. You're getting kind of hit or kneed or, you know, you check to make sure, you know, kidneys aren't bleeding. And then you go from there. When Jack Del Rio said, that's the first time I've ever heard Jack Del Rio do a press conference. And I thought, he thought we were stupid. Mm-hmm. He got back spasms. It just so happened to coordinate with the time that he got rolled up on out on the field. Like, That's some timing.
Yeah.
Like normally you get back spasms when you get out of a bad chair.
Mm-hmm.
That you could have sold me on.
Right.
But that, like, no, that looked a lot worse.
Well, and I thought the play was even the way when it was happening in live action, he got spun around and he was kind of backing upfield with people charging at him. I thought, oh no, this is going to be awful. But he kind of spun down and then was getting hit and turned at the same time. So it really could have been a lot worse looking. It didn't look as bad, but maybe the result is certainly not what he likes or the Raiders.
Text Nation here. Give me Colin Kaepernick. I'm a white man. I don't care about politics. I don't care who took a knee. I just want a team to win games. I don't see color. Give me Colin Kaepernick. That said, I like EJ Manuel. I've been saying it since the beginning of the year, though, that the Raiders should sign Colin Kaepernick. I think EJ Manuel is a fine backup quarterback.
Yeah, I don't
have a problem with that at all. I think he fits with the Raiders, Colin Kaepernick does, but Cap fits in Tennessee, and they decided to go with Brandon Wheaton.
Yeah.
That's egregious.
They better hope Mariota's fine.
That's like court of law stuff. That, yeah. You know, that's the stuff. That right there is one of the signings that the attorney will say, well, here's how we can prove he was blackballed. They signed this guy.
Yeah.
But I like EJ. I mean, I'm glad to know a couple of people here on Text Nation like EJ Manuel too. I don't feel as stupid as
he
I did when
eight
I.
For eight,
well, game. yeah. When he.
And I still say
the offensive. Here's the thing. You mentioned the Ravens.
Yeah.
They have to be better. The offensive line has to be better against the Ravens. If the offensive line is better, and they're going to have whether Derek Carr is out 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 10 weeks. That line has to be better.
Exactly.
If he's out one game, that line has to be better. And I think it's a domino effect from there. That offensive line is better. That run game is better. That run game is better. Suddenly, whoever is at the quarterback position is a little bit better. Now, with that being said, the wide receivers are going to have to help out E.J. Manuel or yep. Connor Cook or Colin Kaepernick or Brandon Whedon, whoever you put back there for the Raiders. Amari Cooper, you're going to have to catch the ball, man.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of comes down to that. You've been targeted too many times. You've had too many drops. You're going to have to catch the ball. Someone is going to have to become a big play receiver for the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, and two passes that Emmanuel put on the hands of Jared Cook. Now, they weren't gimmies, but we're not shocked if he catches either one of those or both touchdowns. Either one of those happen. Raiders have a chance for the extra point in the lead. I don't know if they win. They might. And I think we're thinking differently about them, about the team, about the quarterback position. It didn't happen that way, but those guys need to help them out.
We'll talk more Raiders at 1:30 with Levi Damien, the lead writer and editor-in-chief for Silver and Black Pride. We'll get to Monday Night Football in just a few minutes. But you and I were hanging out at the Golden One Center mm-hmm. last night. And can we get the can you stop tweeting at Donald Trump for a minute here and get the computer hot? You should, by the way, just everybody should find Chris on Twitter. He's not easy to find, but he is very mm-hmm. fun to follow.
Yes, he is.
Everybody should find him because angry political Chris is the best Chris in the world.
Yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't had people come for him.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
It's one day we're not going to be on the air, and it's going to be because Secret Service
yes,
took us on.
So
tell us what you know about this Christopher Lloyd guy.
Did take a hell of a journey to get back from Mexico, so that's something to
Indeed it did. Indeed it did. You heard the G-Man there on the call. As the Sacramento Kings beat the San Antonio Spurs, just like we all thought they would, 106-100. Look, we can talk. We can look at box scores mm-hmm. from the 4,000 people that played the game. We can look at starting lineups. We can look at rotations. We can do all that. I have one takeaway from my time at the Golden One Center yesterday, and that was the one thing, regardless of wins, regardless of anything else, the team is going to be fun to watch. That team was fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And De'Aaron Fox's speed is not like a clever, it's not like a gimmick. It's not like a fun talking point. It is very real. And obviously, if you weren't there at the arena, you didn't get a chance to see it. I heard there were some YouTube links up where
yeah.
people were able to watch the game. But De'Aaron Fox, and don't get like my words twisted. I'm not comparing him to Usain Bolt, but you know when you see Usain Bolt just pass a bunch of people and you realize he is so much faster than everybody else in the race. That was De'Aaron Fox because he would be moving really fast, and then suddenly it would look like the defenders would stop moving,
mm-hmm.
and he would just make his way to they were still moving. It just looked like they stopped, and he would be at the basket just in a split second. And there were a lot of – it wasn't a really big crowd at the Golden One Center last night, but there were a lot of oohs and ahs. Everyone who was there was very much invested in those players on the court.
Yeah, that was going to be my first question for you because I know you hadn't seen him in person. We've seen him on TV. I'd seen him when I saw him in Vegas in Summer League. I went, oh my goodness. Like, it's so obvious. And if you see an outlier in anything, like, wow, that guy is really short. That guy's really tall. That guy's mm-hmm. strong. There's something. These are the best of the best athletes in the world, and they're all fast in their own realm and quick. And then when you see him, you just say, that's different level. When they say that saying, you can't teach this, you can't teach size, you can't teach whatever. His quickness is, and you saw it. I mean, you picked up.
It's incredible.
It's not even like.
It is very real.
It's obvious. And so that is something that he has a special and unique talent. And what was great about it is, we've said this before about, and I feel like I've picked on this guy before, but Ben McLemore, a fantastic athlete. Yes. What do you do with it? Well, mm-hmm. De'Aaron Fox is fast. He's quick. He does something with it. He got to spots he wanted to on the court. He finished. I don't know that he always will, but, I mean, he was getting into the paint and creating havoc, and because of that quickness and that, to me, I think in the entirety of the point guard play, from George Hill, the way he started, to when De'Aaron Fox came in, to when Frank Mason came in. Frank Mason played great. I thought the three point guards stood out above everything else of the night, but I'm glad you got to see him in person because De'Aaron Fox is a spectacular just speedster.
He really is. There is something incredible about watching him.
Mm-hmm.
Just watching that speed, watching that. It's like watching a freak. It's what's my guy in Orlando? The dunker.
Oh, who,
the freakish athleticism.
Aaron Gordon?
No, the rookie. Dennis Smith? Who? I'm sorry.
Oh, that went to, not Dennis, gosh darn it. That
who
went
is
to the
Dennis
Mavericks?
Smith? Like, why am I thinking? Oh, Mavericks, thank you. Not Orlando, the Mavericks.
I just forgot his
name,
too,
from NC State. He's freakishly
athletic.
Yeah, he's free. So when you watch him, you know that, okay, he has something that's just a little bit better than everybody else. That's what watching De'Aaron Fox get up and down the court is like. Scal LaBeciere picked up right where he left off last year. It's like he didn't miss a beat.
Right.
He just, I'm just going to continue to shoot. I'm going to be a highly efficient ball player when I'm out there on the court. No matter how limited my time is, I'm going to be incredibly efficient. And I think that's one thing that Sacramento Kings players have lacked for so long is efficiency. You would see so often. He has enough sample size to where you look at Scal and you go, this kid kind of knows his shot. Like, he knows his game.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of young players don't know their game yet, or their college game doesn't translate to the NBA, or it doesn't translate to the NBA yet. Scal, that dude knows his – he knows what he does well, and he just keeps doing it.
Yeah. And I think, too, this team is going through a transformation in many ways, obviously, with mostly an entirely different roster, an entirely young roster with the sprinkle in of the five veterans that Coach Yeager elected to start. But I also think they're gonna run more, and it fits with what they have in personnel. Their two best players the last couple of years have been Rudy and DeMarcus, guys that thrive in half-court settings, and that's you got to play to your team's strength. Now it's let's go pace, let's get tempo, let's move guys, let's get up and down the floor, get the ball in these quicker guys' hands. So I think that's also going to be an appealing look for fans to watch this team play, whether or not there's wins there, but to watch them play in a quicker pace, I think will be a fun watch.
Anyone else help stand out to you last night?
I think Mason definitely did. Mm-hmm. I think Frank Mason, I think De'Aaron Fox. The second year guys, I mean, Buddy Hield came in and scored.
Yeah.
Scal scored. I think really all of them contributed in a positive way. There were moments where there were some lulls, but you know, they looked relatively sharp for a short camp and, you know, playing a season Spurs team, by the way, that didn't have Rudy, didn't play. He was there. Kawhi's out and Tony Parker. But still, I think at this point, you're worried more about yourself. And, hey, it's one game. I don't get caught up in wins and losses in the preseason, but I thought they belonged. They looked the part, well coached, and looks like what could be a fun team. They shared the ball. I mean, they got the right shots. They didn't make them all, but they shot the ball pretty well.
I didn't want to yank Jorgis Papagiannis off the court last night.
Yeah.
There are times that I have.
Yeah.
I didn't want to last night.
He had some moments. I mean, they ran offense through him a couple times. So, I mean, he had, I think, four turnovers there. He's going to have the ball where he's going to fumble it a little bit. But, you know, then he gets moments where you go, all right, I see progression. I see a guy that has improved, and he's 20. I mean, he's probably come into the NBA about – two decades too late, right? I mean, it's now stretch fives and guys that move up and down the floor. He would have been great maybe 15 to 20 years ago, but hey, there's still a spot for him somewhere.
Harry Giles didn't play, for those who are curious.
Yeah.
Neither did Marcus Williams. I imagine that's probably going to be par for the course with Harry.
Yeah, I guess so. It's weird. He's practicing. He's doing all the things, but they're just being super cautious with him,
which they can afford to be.
Absolutely.
For those curious or who are unaware, Vince Carter, Zach Randolph, Costa Kufis, Garrett Temple, George Hill. That was the starting lineup. I was actually talking to – I don't remember who I was talking to. Sean – I can't remember who I was talking to last night about what the potential starting – Leo Bass from the Sactown Royalty or Cowbell Kingdom,
yeah.
And he was like, what do you think the starting lineup is going to be? And I feel like it's – I told him, I was like, I think it's going to be a fan favorite starting lineup with Vince and Zach Randolph. Like, I don't anticipate those five people are starting
the five
season.
Veterans.
Yeah. I don't think that's the starting lineup come 2 weeks from
tomorrow. I think George Hill is starting.
I agree.
I think Hill is starting.
I think Costa Kufis?
I think he will, but I don't know.
Those are the two that I thought. I don't think Vince Carter is starting, and I don't think Zach Randolph is starting.
How about Temple? Temple's intriguing. I don't know if they put him at the two or the three.
So I was going to ask, would Garrett Temple be starting over Buddy?
I don't know. I mean, again, I think the early problem, again, problem, I don't know if is the right term. I don't know how coach is going to play the guys.
Yeah.
There's not a, hey, here, like last year, Rudy and DeMarcus are the two best players. It was clear. That's the two best players on the team. I don't know who the two best players are, the three best, the four best, the five best. I think they've got a lot of guys that can play, probably should play, but you can't play them all. And I don't know how they're going to do it. We're going to be doing shows on after the first game. We might go, wow, how come Malachi didn't play? Or, wow, he only played close to 5 minutes. I don't know what the breakdown will be, but there will be some good players that will be left out.
And I have to wonder how long – I understand the group is young, very young, mm-hmm. and I understand there's a lot you're trying to figure out with this group. But I also wonder how long can you get away with doing that?
What, playing a bunch of guys? Or
not playing a bunch of guys, but not having a
set.
Yeah,
group.
Like with 6 minutes left in the first quarter, you know that the sixth man is going to come in,
mm-hmm.
whoever the sixth man is. Now, I don't know if Dave Yeager is one of those guys who kind of operates on the clock. There are a lot of coaches who go by the clock,
yeah.
especially with stars. You know, if you tune in, or you knew when you tune in at the beginning of a fourth quarter of a Lakers game, Kobe Bryant wasn't going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Never. He was never there, no matter the game circumstance. That's his preference. That's coaching preference. Some coaches, a team could be on a run. They could be on a 10-0 run. You look up, and there's 6:05 left, no dead ball. You got to get guys to the table because that's your clock. You want guys on their rest. I don't know if Dave Yeager is that type of coach or not, but I know there's a certain feeling out process with these young guys, and it's – is it a month? Is it, you know, the first 10 games of the season, the first 15 games of the season? Or is it going to be a situation like where we were last year where, now granted, circumstances changed in February, but is it a situation where this person played 15 minutes and then didn't play the next night, got a DNP?
Right.
Or, you know, like you said, wow, Malachi only played 5 minutes. He played 22 the other night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much, like, just for the sanity of the players, like, we've had players tell us directly on the air that's really, really difficult.
Yeah.
I feel like you've got to get some semblance of something going here relatively early in the season.
Yeah, I know it would be easier for the coach, maybe not easier for the players, but if he just said, okay, tonight, Zebo, Justin Jackson, and Frank Mason are inactive.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, I just can't even use those three. And then just, you know, I don't know if that's what they want.
But if you're a player, aren't you like, why?
Right, yes. Like, but then is it, well.
What I do, like, my first thought would be, I've been told I was inactive before on the day I was supposed to play.
Right.
Like, why?
But would you rather know that you're not in or like, hey, it's, oh, I didn't get in. Are you throwing me in the last 2 minutes? Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a tricky situation.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is because there's a balance of Dave Yeager has to figure out what works best? What wins games?
Yeah.
Because that's what we're talking about. We'll come back. We'll finish up this conversation. We'll get into a hell of a Monday night football game last night in which I think we saw two really good teams. Obviously, Kansas City has put a stamp on being the best team in the league through the first quarter of the season. We'll talk about that as we continue here with the lowdown. I don't know.
Nothing?
I got nothing.
Hi. This is radio.
Thank you. I really wasn't sure. I always try. I'm not really sure what's happening right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's on.
Welcome. Thank you. This is anybody there? Okay, thanks. Welcome back to this incredibly professional broadcast known as The Lowdown. Jason and Damian here with you. Talked a little bit about D.C., Derek Carr being out 2 to 6 weeks. We'll talk with Levi Damian, the lead writer and editor-in-chief for Silver and Black Pride, coming up at 1:30. We'll have our one small thought on the NFC. We got a lot of football ahead. We didn't get an opportunity because we were talking about the Kings winning their first preseason game last night against San Antonio. Again, a really fun game to watch. If nothing else, if you have the ability to go to the Golden One Center or you're going to be tuned into NBC, it was NBC Sportsnet or whatever it's called, to watch these games, you're going to be entertained. There's going to be some clunkers, I'm sure, this year.
Yeah.
But these guys are fun to watch, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. You got to listen to this. This is the final call of the game last night.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City and Washington. We know Kansas City stays undefeated. They beat Washington. Kansas City sitting at 4-0. It was really a fun, competitive game. But I love this final call for so many reasons. Okay, so there's a lot to take away.
Yeah.
And I think Sean McDonough actually pointed this out on the broadcast, which shows you how spectacular it was. The Chiefs covered the spread with that touchdown.
Somehow, some way.
And it shifted the over. It went from the over to the under.
Or the under to the over.
The
right?
under to yeah. the over, yes. Thank you. Yeah. I'll learn how to do this one day. My favorite part about this call is the change in
of
his
about
tone
to give
of
the score
voice.
With a 23-20, and now they've scored a touchdown.
In which he very much sounds like, it very much sounded like he had the under and the spread covered. And right there at that moment, he realizes I think that right there is the call of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That is what Las Vegas sounded like as that was going.
Well, and I always love to see Monday's game, SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt because he has bad beats. And that's one of his favorite segments is the bad beats. And so this one has to be the qualifier where you're Washington going for either the tie, potentially the win. They dropped the touchdown late. But at worst case, you're thinking, we're covering, right? Then Kansas City gets down, kicks a field goal. All right, still we're good. Mm-hmm. And then that play happens to close
that
the game.
That is so brutal. First text right here when the call plays. That last play cost my buddy $500.
Yeah, I believe it.
Your buddy's a degenerate, first of all. But no, I mean, people. Look, that's why the NFL is as popular as it is.
Yeah.
Right? It's because of gambling. Mm-hmm. It's because you.
Or fantasy, all of it.
Well, that's all gambling.
Related to
it,
you're right.
even if you're just in a fantasy league at work, you probably pay $20 to get in.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever. You're in a survivor pool.
Sure.
You may have lost $20 in the first freaking week of the season.
I don't think people do that.
Anyways, it all comes down to money. It all comes down to gambling, and it all comes back to those odds that are set. Mm-hmm. And those Las Vegas bookies are on it.
They're good at their jobs.
They're very good at their job, and they must have been thinking, I wonder if they ever sit back and think, look at how great we are at this, right? And then something crazy like that happens.
Or they argue amongst themselves, I said the point spread should have been this. See? See? Yeah.
Wouldn't you, like, again, the spread was, you had, was it 7.5 if you took Washington? Or 7.5?
For Kansas
I would have taken that.
Yeah, I would have thought Washington
would
have covered
that. I was
like,
that. Oh, they'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Washington's played well. We were discussing this yesterday.
Almost won the game.
Right. They played well again. Yeah. They're a perplexing team. We're going to talk about them at the top of the 1 o'clock hour when Jay Ross and I give you one small thought on every team in the NFC East. But the Washington is a bit confusing.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like they're really good. Kansas City, they're not confusing.
Right.
They're good.
They're legitimate.
They're far better than I gave them credit for before the season. It sucks, and again, I know this is Raider country, this is home of the Raiders, and I understand all of that, and I know everybody wants Kansas City to fail and the other three teams in the AFC West to fail, which is how we should all feel for the teams in our division. But for Kansas City fans, you have to look at it as like, yeah, it's cool. It's like par for the course. Nothing matters until we get to the playoffs. Because we've seen Andy Reid do this before.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, remember the last team to lose last year? Do you recall off the top of your head? The last team in the NFL that lost a game last year.
Atlanta?
Nope. 5-0.
Oh, the last team.
The last team to lose a game.
Yeah. Was Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
Yep. 5-0. How'd that work out?
Right.
They're still trying to weed through what happened last year this year.
Yeah.
But this team's significantly better. Minnesota, I think, was winning last year in spite of, you know, they had lost Teddy Bridgewater. I think if Teddy Bridgewater had been there and they had been winning games, no one would have been terribly shocked. But for Bradford to come in at the amount of time that he had to get accustomed to what was going on and all of that, I think that kind of caught people off guard.
Yeah.
Nothing about what Kansas City is doing. I mean, Kansas City was 12-4 last year.
Oh, yeah, they won the division. There was a good team, obviously. The thing that I feel is different, at least at the moment, and what I've been critical of, you've heard me say it, about Alex Smith. Well, he's playing the best football of his career, and I thought what he was not able to do consistently would be if they're trailing. Could he get a big drive? Could he lead a big win? Well, the season opener, they're losing to the Patriots, and he scores a boatload of points in Foxborough. Yesterday, that final drive to give an infield goal position to win the game was impressive. So he has done things at a different level. There's more pieces around him. The defense has always been good. I feel like they're just the most balanced team. Good quarterback play, strong running game, good skill players, good defense, just not as many holes maybe as other teams. Where the Raiders, good offense, shaky defense. Patriots, for whatever reason, bad defense right now, good offense. Chiefs just have the most balance, at least at the moment.
Text right here, a couple of them. Kansas City has always been a great regular season team, which is what we were talking about. It's the postseason where they fail. It will come by then. The Patriots will have everything figured out. How do they lose games there at Arrowhead? It seems like that place is now becoming mythical in terms of home field advantages in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's like the early 90s Lambeau, where it felt like no one could win there under any circumstances. I feel like that's what's happening in Kansas City right now. Another text, you guys think Andy Reid made Alex Smith play as good as he has, or has he just matured naturally? I think we've addressed this a little bit before, because you hate Alex Smith. I you no longer hate him, though.
No, I have to acknowledge how well he's playing. The things I thought he couldn't do, he's doing. So I was wrong on that.
I think a lot of it is, one, stability, which he had with Harbaugh, and then going to Andy Reid, who is you could change a team. And there's a lot of conversation that Alex Reid isn't going to be on Kansas City next year.
Yeah.
They went and got Patrick Mahomes. This is his last year. What are you willing to pay Alex Smith, a guy who, you know, we joke, you don't hate Alex Smith, but I like him. You don't particularly love him. I joke and say you hate him.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who are having conversations that you and I are having, where one person really likes what Alex Smith does and the other person doesn't. Mm-hmm. And I imagine these conversations are probably taking place in the Kansas City front office as well. Like, so what if he goes 8-0? What if he goes 10-0? What if they go 16-0, but we don't win a Super Bowl? It's going to be hard to get rid of a quarterback who wins you the Super Bowl. But anything short of that, are you moving forward with Patrick Mahomes? And if you're not, how much are you willing to pay Alex Smith to stay?
Yeah, and I think some of the other things that he wasn't doing that they brought Mahomes in to do was the arm strength, get the ball downfield. Well, he's throwing it downfield way more than he used to. So he's capable. I think he's well-coached. He's listened. Mm-hmm. He's grown, and he's in the perfect position now, but he's putting them in a difficult position, Kansas City, about his future.
And they got a lot of really good complementary players on that team. And that defense is nothing short of spectacular. We'll touch on that. Plus, there were some other preseason games that didn't involve your Sacramento Kings. They didn't involve LeBron James, or at least for part of it, Lonzo Ball. We'll explain next on the Lowdown. We'll get to one small thought on the NFC, AFC. We'll talk with Levi Damian, the lead writer, editor-in-chief for Silver and Black Pride, coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll talk with Levi at 1:30. We'll talk with JR right now. JR, what's happening, my man?
Yo, honeys, what's up?
What's up, brother?
Hey, I've always loved Mr. Smith, Alex Smith, and I think the one thing definitely this year, J-Ross, is O.K. Hunt is a serious football player, and it helps Alex out tremendously to know that running back is there with him, whether it be running or receiving or blocking. That guy is a serious ball player, and it helps that Kansas City offense quite a bit. And I will say, I mean, when I first turned the game on, Redskins versus Chiefs, I really had some reservations.
Oh.
But I just realized Wigwam or Teepee, I was just a little too tense.
Bye, JR.
Bye-bye.
Oh, boy.
I apologize for JR's behavior.
Too tense.
Yikes. You know who's laughing? I can just picture Doug Christie in his car laughing. thinking that's the funniest thing he's heard all day. By the way, anybody remember Spencer Ware?
I heard of that guy.
Eric Berry?
Yeah.
Anybody? Anybody remember those guys?
Yeah. I mean, for their sake. Not that you want one guy over the other.
I love Eric Berry more than, but, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And when you win the way that this team keeps winning, no one's talking about, oh, man, if only they had Eric Berry back. Oh, if only they had Spencer Ware back.
Next man up, right? That cliche is a big one, but it fits for them.
Man.
Kareem Hunt's been incredible.
He really set the tone there that first game of the season, which is just extraordinary. And then to lose Eric Berry along the way, who – you know, I think we talked about, I think it was yesterday, Sean Lee and how he's the heart and soul of the Dallas Cowboys defense. And you can see, as you saw in that Rams game, when he's gone, that's what Eric Berry is to Kansas City. But unlike Dallas, for Kansas City, it looks like I assume Justin Houston just stepped up and said, okay, don't worry about it. I play a different position. I got to do. I'm going to do things differently, but follow my lead, and I'll get you there. I'll get you to the promised land. And a quarter of the way through the season, that's exactly where they are because they're a damn good football team. And we're watching the replay
the bizarre
right now.
Replay.
Yeah, the replay of Monday Night Football is happening here in front of us. And it's so funny because the score is 20-20 right now with 27 seconds left. I left the Golden One Center, and I was standing outside sauced watching this play that they just showed. I got home, and the game was just barely ending.
Yeah, there's still 9 points to be scored in the next 27 seconds.
Obviously, I drive way too fast, or I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong to where I can get from sauce to my house in enough time to see these guys walking off the court, walking off the field and shaking hands.
Yeah.
There's a change. Breaking news from the NBA. There's a change to the All-Star Game format. A lot of people were bitching and complaining about last year's All-Star Game and a lack of defense and blah, 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 blah. For some reason, people tuned into the All-Star Game to see something competitive. They've made a change. We'll let you know what that is and whether or not that excites you. There were some other preseason games last night in addition to the Sacramento Kings beating the San Antonio Spurs. I'm just going to keep repeating that because I don't know how many times we'll get to say it over the course of the next 8 months or so. LeBron didn't play in the Cleveland game. Kyrie did play in Boston's game, which was weird. Just watching it, it was like, okay. There's going to be a lot of those moments where you're getting used to something.
Yeah.
Melo is going to take some getting
used
to.
That's tonight, Melo and Paul George with Westbrook.
There's going to be those moments where it's like, okay, this happened.
Yeah. First game here when Chris Paul and James Harden are together. It's like, yeah, I guess that's real.
Hey, Chris is here. Cool.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Lonzo Ball did play last night. The Lakers looked spectacular when he was in. I'm not going to use that S word when describing, not that S word that the Kings would describe the Lakers at. I'm not going to use Showtime when describing a Lonzo Ball led Laker team. But much like the team here in Sacramento, they were fun to watch. He twist his ankle? I think he twisted his ankle and kind of sat out the rest of the game. He said he wanted to get back again this preseason. Why bother? But those were a couple of the notes. Washington played some like an overseas team or something last night, so there wasn't really much to take away from there. But there were some other preseason things there to watch. And as you mentioned, Oklahoma City plays tonight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kings fans are not concerned with what the Lakers are doing. They just want to keep seeing them fail. But Lonzo Ball is a good player. He really is going to be good. He's going to make people better. He shares the ball. He moves it, advances it. He's a great passer. But and the Kings can be happy with what they have. They've got good things going, too. I don't know that he's going to make the impact that some are saying, like, are jumping the Lakers up to 35, 40 wins. I don't know that that's happening.
I don't know.
There's still some holes in that roster. But, again, they're trying to do it similarly in a way with, you know, maybe you build with Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram and find a few other pieces here, and they're still going to be able to strike at some point and get, and it might be this next summer, a really high-level significant free agent, but they're just not quite there yet.
Zach Lowe for ESPN wrote an article about the league pass rankings, which is he does this every year, the most exciting teams to watch if you have league pass, meaning if you're not watching the nationally televised game, who out there is worth watching. No shocker who number one is. It's the Golden State Warriors. Mm-hmm. Number two was the team that you just mentioned, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Are you in? Are you all in on the Thunder for League Pass?
I'm curious about that group, that trio. Yeah. I mean, well, Westbrook is as entertaining as they come anyway, alone. I don't know that Carmelo's style is super entertaining, but just seeing how those three will coexist, not in a way like, hey, this won't function, but just the nights where they're all on, I think will be great basketball.
Is this a tough situation for Russell Westbrook in that if it goes great, it's because he made a change? And if it doesn't go great, it's because he refused to change?
Yeah, I could see that avenue for him. I don't know if he's going to change.
I feel like he is. I feel
in
like,
what way though? Like in
I asked this question. At least I think I did. If I didn't, I asked it in my head.
Ken and I, we were all together on media day, right?
Right, and I asked, can Russell Westbrook play like Chris Paul? And you said you thought that he could.
Well, I mean, he gets assists, and I think that's.
But Chris Paul isn't. Even though Chris Paul can shoot and he can play the two, he's not a shoot first point guard. Mm-hmm. That's basically what we're talking about with Russell Westbrook, right? Eliminating the need or want or desire to shoot first.
Where they're different in this sense is Russell led the league in scoring.
Mm-hmm.
They need him to score too. I mean, Chris Paul can score and can have a night where he gets 30 and 15, but he can also have a night where he has this same impact, but he had 12 points and 18 assists. Westbrook has the ability to fill the entire stat page up. Carmelo's led the league in scoring.
Yeah.
Paul George probably is capable of it.
And Carmelo has to make damn near as big of an adjustment as Russell Westbrook does.
Yeah.
Because Melo likes to create. And he's, for the most part, been bad at it over his last
stretch. Because he does it a lot by himself.
Right. And so I wonder if this is a situation where we suddenly see Melo start averaging 7 or 8 assists a game. Because we've seen him create, but he's never had anybody to pass the ball to. And he's never had that B player there or that other A player there. Now he has 2 A guys with him. Do we see him now, instead of trying to create his own shot, just try to create a play?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of the dynamics that those three have had. Has Westbrook been the only one that's maybe played with a player better than him?
Yes, because Paul George hasn't played with someone that's better.
No, he's been the guy.
He's been the guy. And
Carmelo
hasn't.
The guy.
Yeah, he hasn't played with. And yeah, he hasn't played with someone.
Russell's lived it. He didn't always. I mean, he wanted the ball, which is natural. But that again, that first late game situation, someone's going to be left without. You know, Paul George last year. Well, they have to give me the ball. Well, do they?
So here's a question to think about, and we'll step out for a second. Is Melo's playing with a player that's better than him now? He's probably playing with 2 players that are better than him. Is Paul George?
He is. Oh, yeah, he is. Is this thing on? was that what they call a tease that I butchered, cut it up, and ripped it apart? My first show.
Hour number 2 of the Lowdown coming up next.